Hello and welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course Podcast. This podcast was recorded live from the YouTube Ham Radio Crash Course channel. We stream every Friday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and try to cover many topics in amateur radio. Consider supporting us through patreon.com/Hosh Nasi, which is Hotel Oscar Sierra Hotel, Nevada Alpha Sierra India. Without further ado, let's get started. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Ham Radio Crash Course. Welcome to Friday. Got a very, very special stream again. Lots to talk about. Posted a video today. Posted a video on the upcoming giveaway that we're going to have for the Shegu G90, which is a fun little radio. Can't wait for that one. That's going to be a lot of fun. What's up? We got Ethan in the house. Hey, 1965 Westfall, thanks for your comments earlier. Appreciate the help there. I'll get to it. You know, this is like the first camera that's like actually manual that I've been messing with. But it should be good. All right. I should turn down my volume because I'm blowing myself out. I don't think you're hearing it that well in the background. There we go. And we got Zach, W5KUB as well. Hey, buddy, how you been? I haven't talked to you in a while. I got to get some time away from work to get home early and be on your show. All right. Okay. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. Hope you enjoyed those little memes that we used to start things off. We have just a couple of news stories, just a couple of things to talk about that I think are fun, and we'll dive right into those as well. But first, why are we here? Well, this is the Ham Radio Crash Course, and the idea being to create a community, an inclusive community, a group of people that are, you know, not crappy to each other, you know, supportive, give you a helping hand, keep you motivated, that kind of thing. And the goal for this channel is to try and introduce people to new things, some for the noobs and some for the more complicated stuff, but still new, right? If you take something really complicated, you're still new at it the first time you play around with it, right? So that's the idea. And we like to do homework. You know, I sometimes forget, but teacher didn't forget. The homework for today is think about building an antenna. We're going to talk a little bit about some antenna projects at the end of the slides here. And we will have the call-ins. You're welcome to call in and ask a question because we're going to be covering a lot of content. So hopefully I'm able to do it for you in a way that makes sense and is fun. All right. So the first thing that we're going to talk about. Nope. Where is it? There it is. The Ohio State Parks on the Air is happening. Starting tomorrow, 7th. It starts, let's see. It starts September 7th. I don't know if there's a time that this starts. But anyway, September 7th, there's some hours right there, so you can follow it. We're less than 12 hours away from that starting. It's an event that I guess happens every year. Someone reached out to me on Twitter. I'm sorry, I don't have your call sign written down in front of me. I should have done that in the show notes. But anyway, it's a great little opportunity to get out there and work some Parks on the Air contacts in Ohio. So make sure you check that out. It is ospota.org is the website. So pretty easy. Now, the second thing, and you probably already saw it, I posted a video today on our giveaway. Basically, I'm going to give that G90 away when I hit 73,000 subscribers. And again, thanks MFJ for doing this giveaway with me. And the link to get in on it is on the MFJ, on my video. So you just click on the link and it'll take you to it. And you can join the contest that way. Somebody just said hello in the front of my house. Like a person. There's somebody in front of my house right now. They're leaving. I don't know who that is. Sorry about that. So the G90, will give that away at 73,000, and then we will do a special stream with more giveaways. Likely I'm going to give away a couple of Brie antennas and some other fun stuff that I've picked up. I guess they left, so they were satisfied, or maybe they're just dropping something off. And then I will be doing an overnight soda activation. So we'll have, I think it's Mount Pacifico. We'll do some more information on that in the future, but as it gets closer. But I'm thinking, you know, by the way, this is Jerry, KG6HQD, is the one that recommended it. And he said he's already been. I watched his video on it. There's actually a campground on the peak, on the summit. And I'm thinking, if you want to go, let's go. And we'll just go on the same weekend, and we'll have a little party, I guess you could say, up there. I don't think there's signal. Otherwise, we could try and live stream. But anyway, it would be a soda party on the top of Mount Pacifica whenever I set the date. And that's really going to depend a little bit on maybe you guys, if you're that interested, put the word out there. If you got a couple of buddies that you're trying to lure into amateur radio, maybe throw them a link to my videos, and that would be fun. What do we got? more giveaways. Yeah, the Abreez are so cheap, and they're on Amazon, so I'll just pick a bunch of winners, and then I'll just ship them to you from Amazon, so I don't have to pay shipping. That sounds like a great idea. Anyway, okay, so I did have my dad's in town for my oldest son's birthday, and so I was drinking a little bit of IPA. I do have a beer, though, and this is the hop juice. Whoa. I didn't even look at that. Let me switch over here. Hop juice. It's a triple India pale ale. So let's get that guy open because I'm going to need some beers. Well, I don't know. This is going to be a little heady. We got a lot to cover. So what are we talking about today? Well, today is the Patron Picks episode. What we do over on Patreon, the producer levels on Patreon, get to pick a topic out of like 20 or so options that I kind of curate and keep the list growing. Every month, they get to pick the first Friday of the month episode. And this episode that they chose was antenna terms and builds. So we're going to talk a lot about different antennas. I'm going to break down what the parts are, what they're referred to as, kind of roughly a background on how they work, and then we'll do pros and cons. Now, a bit of a caveat, you'll see in a second. I picked up an iPad Pro. There's an app called Procreate, and I've been playing around with that for a couple of days, and so I did a little bit of illustration here, so don't laugh at my illustrations. So what do we got going on in the chat? There's no law when you're drinking White Claws. Man, we've been talking a lot about White Claws. That comes up in the admin chat a lot. Sijad Golchin Poor, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, says, why am I watching this 6 a.m. in the morning? Well, thank you. Is that India? Is it India time or UK? I think it might be UK. No, it can't be. It can't be UK. Man, Mount Pacifico sounds good, says the Carries. Awesome. More giveaways. Yeah, I love giveaways, man. If people want to send me stuff to give away, I'm absolutely down for that. Iran. Westfalla says that person is in Iran. That's awesome. We got Brazil in the house. We got Chile in the house. Iran, somewhere in China. Or maybe that's just people saying what they think it is. Yeah, the app is called Procreate. Procreate. But, you know, if you say it fast, it's Procreate. And just a reminder, guys, when we wrap the whole show up, Ethan and Zach are posting links to our Discord, and our Discord is kind of like a new hip for the kids IRC chat room that also does voice. And so what we like to do at the end of these shows is jump on over there and we just continue the discussion, but you guys can talk back, ask questions, whatever, if you don't feel like calling in when we do the live stream. So, you know, feel free to take the link and start joining Discord. It only takes a minute to get on there. And of all the social medias, Discord's a pretty good one because you're talking to people like immediately, and it's pretty safe. People worried about the security of it, but I'm sure Loyal and Dom, who are some of our admins, can be able to talk more in that in the chat. But anyway, all right, let's slide on over to the slides. So what are we talking about? Common amateur radio antenna terms and good builds to start out on. So everything we're going to talk about today is going to basically apply to VHF, UHF, as well as HF. Although some of these antennas are not going to be antennas that you're necessarily going to want to use on an HT or a mobile that you would be talking to a repeater with, right? Mainly these are going to be for your lower signal stuff, your weak signal stuff, as they call it, on VHF, UHF. So just keep that in mind. But the concepts are the same. And in fact, a lot of the concepts, like when we talk about an HT antenna, when we start talking about breaking this down a bit, it's going to be similar to the ones that you'd use on HF. They're just smaller. So there are two antennas that I feel that you have to kind of understand. And once you understand those, then other antennas are just kind of like tweaking information and understanding kind of what you already know, right? So What are they? What are they? The vertical and the dipole, right? And there's an example of a vertical that is me on Baker, or that's my station that I set up on Baker Peak. I believe it's, Bertha Peak in Big Bear, and that was at 8,000 feet on that one. Really beautiful. That was a really beautiful view. So the vertical is common everywhere, right? I just held up an HT, like this guy right here, handy talkie. Your mobile radios that you would have in your car, your verticals that you have at home. Vertical antennas are all over the place. And then the dipole, this is a bad example of a dipole, my lawn chair dipole, but we'll have a better example shortly breaking down what that is. But largely, it's considered your first HF antenna, right? People love the dipole for a multitude of reasons that we're going to talk about, but just to kick off a little bit of it, they're simple. They're really easy to use, and they're very effective, and there's all kinds of different ways that you can deploy them. Real quick on the beer front, now that I've had a couple sips, by the way, I'm drinking it out of the Ham Radio 2.0 commemorative glass from Hamvention. Thank you, Jason, again on that. By the way, in a couple weeks, we'll have Jason on the show, and he's going to come join us to talk about DMR. In fact, we're going to be asking him questions about DMR. We're going to quiz him a little bit. Don't tell him. I don't know if he's in the chat. I'm just kidding. So let's. Here's my first Procreate illustration. Don't make fun of that house. That house is real bad. The tree, though, I was all right with that tree. The antennas are what's important, though. So let's start with the dipole. The dipole is a half wave antenna, meaning the elements, the portions of the antenna that you're using as an antenna, are half of a wavelength for whatever frequency that you're operating on. So if you wanted the radio to be resonant on 14.500 megahertz, would be a little bit above the start of the general space on 20 meters, then you would divide the 14.5, the frequency, against 468, and you get 16.14 feet. So you're going to have that. And that's going to be your half-wave ballpark number that you're going to... I think I might have screwed that math up. But anyway, you're going to have two legs, and those legs are quarter waves, and then it adds up to a half wave, and that's what you're going to be using as your antenna. What goes in the middle there is a little connection, or a center connector, or possibly a balun. And what happens after you build it is you're going to tune it by shortening it. You're going to cut long, right? Because it's a lot easier to cut an antenna down than it is to put material back on. So keep that in mind. But once you have something like that, then you just need to try and keep it as high up as you can, and it will propagate very well. Now, we'll get into details a little bit more, but that's the brief intro because the parts of the dipole. So 2 1-quarter wave radiating elements or legs, one for each part of the coax or feed line. And this is an important thing to get your mind around. So if a piece of coax has a center connector and then a braid shielding around it, Sean Bale sent a super chat for me to take art class. So thank you. I appreciate that. I'll get better at it. This is like my first day using it. So yeah, propagate, not procreate, says 66. Very good. So basically, a dipole is going to have two legs, and one of those legs correlates to the center pin of your coax, and the other leg is going to correlate to the shield on the coax. You're going to have one element that's connected to the quote-unquote positive and the other end that's on the quote-unquote ground. That's going to be more apparent when we go to vertical antennas, but that's the basic idea. Now, a balun. Oh, Lortano sent me a thumbs up. I've not seen that before. That's pretty interesting. Hey, thank you, buddy. So you get the legs of the antenna, right, sticking out. And then you've got the balun in the middle. Now, you don't have to have a balun. You can just literally solder onto the center pin and solder onto the shielding. Why people use a balun, we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. But it helps get rid of some of the common mode currents that you might pick up on the antenna. And that would be stuff, RFI around you, that would kind of couple with your coax and come down, or a couple to your antenna and come down the feed line. Let's see. I think I got a bad one. Please at some point touch on if you need a balun or not. No. So Bruce, you're stealing my thunder. So you don't need a balun to make a dipole antenna. You would just want a Balin if you have a lot of RFI. If you live in a very noisy environment, like I live in the suburbs with a lot of just people with bad wall warts and solar panels and plasma TVs and all that stuff, and grow lights now, because we live in California where weed is recreational. Grow lights are like the worst, right? They'll put out a bunch of RFI, and you're, that can jump on the coax, it can jump on the antenna. And what is an antenna designed to do? It's designed to pull in this RF, right? This radiated RF power. And so you're literally going to suck that stuff in, and it's going to create a really high noise floor. So people like to deploy a Balin to keep that down, which is great. Ethan says, when are you going to drink a White Claw on stream? Maybe I should do... Oh, hey, it's working, I guess. I guess they're going for the long... We're going to see how long that goes for. I don't know what the deal is. Sometimes this thing pops off, sometimes it doesn't. I don't get it. And now it's not going to shut off. So, oh, there it goes. Wall warts equals AC adapters. Yes, correct. Anyone got a 20? The bear trap. Okay. So, dipole antennas, common uses of dipoles, right? So, horizontal is generally the preferred way, I would say, to use a dipole. Get it high up. Get it horizontal because it'll be horizontally polarized. Horizontally polarized antennas seem to do a bit better for noise level. It'll keep the noise level down, and that's going to help you on the receive side. So you've got two resonant wires on a specific frequency. It's mono band and it's pretty wide banded, meaning if you cut it for the middle of 20 meter band, you're going to get most of 20 meters before the SWR starts to drop off. And we'll talk about what standing wave ratio is in a second. But that's the kind of idea. If you were like me in a small kind of suburban lot, I don't have room to put up a horizontal dipole. So even on 20 meters, I could only do an inverted V. And an inverted V works, but it behaves a bit more like a vertical. It's a little bit more omnidirectional, and the radiation pattern is a bit different. And then there is a thing called a vertical dipole, and we'll talk about a specific instance of a vertical dipole. But basically, if you were to think of a dipole, right? Again, you got your double ears up, and you got your lines, right? Each side of the coax with your center connector, right? And the coax is coming down. Well, if you just took the whole thing and rotated it, right, vertically, and you let the shield side of the coax connector drape on the ground or just hang, right? That would be an antenna. It wouldn't be as effective as necessarily a horizontal dipole, but there are instances where you can make a vertical dipole as efficient as a horizontal dipole. So that is a real thing. So don't let anybody tell you that's not. In fact, there's a couple, I have a couple of what you'd call a vertical dipole. So pros and cons. Simple and dirt cheap, effective, it's efficient, right? If you're cutting it, it's a mono band, you're cutting it for the frequency you want to operate on, you're going to get great SWR. Go no further than the, you know, Jerry KG6HUD, we mentioned him earlier on his SODA activation. By the way, W6RIP and KG6HQD just did a Sierra trip, multi-day Sierra trip, SODA activation. Very cool videos, both those guys. I'll try to remember to put that in the description, but go search them, W6RIP and KJ6HQD. Anyway, so they're efficient, generally very easy to put up, right? You don't need a lot. In fact, let me go back a step. So all you need, in fact, let me go back up to this one. So all you need is just hang it like that. You've got, you know, two cords on each side. You can just tie a knot. You don't have to use an insulator necessarily. Just make sure you keep your tune and get that thing up in the air. You can use the side of your roof or hopefully get it a little bit higher than that. Sean Falconberry, thanks for everything you do, my friend. See, why did that only went for like a second? Ethan said one about White Claws or something like that. It went on forever. Thank you, Shane. I appreciate that, buddy. All right. So, and then you've got broadbanded, mentioned broadbanded. Now, dipoles are very good for NVIS, which we will talk about later, but that's another reason why you might want one. And in fact, you can build one like that speaker wire dipole, and you can just kind of put it away or get a Balin, Balans are cheap, really cheap. You can buy them HRO, you can buy them on Amazon. In fact, I'll add one to the Amazon A store, and you guys can check it out. But, you know, just a one-to-one Balan has coax in the bottom and two mount points. And you can just have that in your kit with a spool of wire. And then you can build a Balan on any band you want at any time. And you can put that in an emergency kit. In fact, this is a really good idea for a video. Don't tell any of the YouTube ham radio people. I might do this. That's good to put in an emergency kit, I say. The cons is it likes to be up a bit higher. That seems to help it out. And it's less of a long-distance antenna. It's going to be more effective a bit closer in. Brett Berger says, thanks for all you do for ham radio. Hashtag White Claw. Oh, it's going to be one of those streams. We got a lot of White Claw fans in here, apparently. BLR says, you have a preference, Josh, to terminate your coax with a BNC or a PL259? That's a great question. That's a little bit outside of this topic, but I'll mention it briefly. Actually, it could be, so I take that back. I like BNCs for QRP radios. In fact, every one of my QRP radios has a BNC connection. And some of my HTs have BNCs, right? So this is a Kenwood D72A, and this guy is a wideband receiver. And you can put a nice long wire on it or a shortwave listening antenna. And BNC posts work great. PL259s are good for your 100-watt radios and up. That's generally what I use. I'm not that much of a stickler, but I seem to care more about BNC on my portable stuff. I really like that. So that would be my recommendation. Okay, so we're moving on to the vertical. And we're, man, we got slides, and we're already at 720. Boy. So if you get the concept of you've got two elements, and you've got a center connector to coax. One goes to the center pin, the other goes to the shielding. Well, how does a vertical apply to that? Well, if you think about it in a simple sense, a vertical is also a half-wave antenna, where one quarter wave is the vertical element, the thing you see. And then you've got another part of the antenna, the other quarter wave, that is either buried in the ground via radials or on the right-hand side of this picture is on my house. That's called a ground plane antenna. Those little stingers that are sticking out of the side of it, you know, that's part of the antenna. And you might be saying to yourself, well, what's going on with this vertical that's on my mobile? There's no radial hanging off of it or whatever. Well, the reality is it's either using my car as a ground plane, if you will, or there's coiling in the base of that antenna. Don't know the answer, but that's really the only way that they can make that work. So if a dipole has a leg for the center pin and a shield for the, you know, another one for the shield of the coax, a vertical would be the center pin and the shield is the radials, right? So it's still the same concept. You've just gone from the dipole this way to it vertically and then having something underneath it. And it probably looks something like that. So you've got a vertical antenna and then you have a bunch of radials, right? And radials are, they could be buried wires, they could be wires that are sitting on the surface, and generally you want more than four. And I believe there is a point, there are so many studies on how many radials you need to use with your amateur radio antenna that I won't cover here. I'll let you Google that. But the sweet spot seems to be about 32. And then upward from there, you start getting diminishing returns on having radials. But what are the... Oh, that was interesting. I didn't make a one for this breaking down the parts. Anyway, the parts of the vertical are the whip, which is the vertical, or it's often called the stinger, or the part that goes up. The radials, though, those are ground wires or lawnmower destroyers. That's what we know them as. And that's a basic amateur radio vertical antenna. So what are the vertical antenna pros and cons? Pros are you get a better takeoff angle, particularly for HF, right? So if you're thinking about, you know, the vertical, the radiation pattern of a vertical antenna, and you're looking for that bounce off the atmosphere, then verticals are pretty good because you get a good low takeoff angle. And that it's going to travel for a long time before it hits the atmosphere and then bounces back to Earth. The dipole gives you less of that, but you then have more consistency, I guess, with a dipole in some cases. But anyway, we're not going to deep dive a lot of this stuff. I'm just going to get you the terms to get you started, and then you can go look into it as you wish. But and it doesn't depend as much on height. So dipoles like to be high. You got to get them up in the air. They like being half wave plus higher. Verticals don't mind as much, although a nice long vertical is great. The cons, though, to match a dipole in its performance, because again, if you're talking about really a vertical is just half of a dipole with this ground thing going on underneath it, you need a lot of radials. That's how you get an efficient, you know, vertical antenna. Plus, they generally have higher noise than a dipole. And why is that? It's the polarization of the antenna. It's a vertically polarized antenna versus a horizontally polarized. We're going to do this a lot because I think that's cool now. So before we move on to some other antennas, we're going to talk about SWR really quickly. So SWR is a ratio, and you've heard this term. You know what it means. You know everybody's like super intense about getting a really low SWR and having a really, really good SWR. And I'm not going to go into a lot of the details here because this is like, one, it's a ham radio minefield. If you make content on SWR, watch out because you're going to get a lot of people coming after you. There's a lot of good information out there too. A lot of detailed information, like doctorate level theses have been released on SWR. But basically what it is if you lived in a perfect, if you had something called, I believe it's an isometric dipole. So if you had a dipole, right, again, and you suspended it in space, like just a complete vacuum of space, it would be a perfect one-to-one match when you fed it appropriately with your coax and your radio. You would have a one-to-one SWR rating. The reality is that you don't really get a one-to-one match. And what that is when you have a mismatch is that your radiated voltage that's attempting to go down your coax, hit the antenna, and become RF radiation, some of it reflects back on the antenna, back down the coax, and into the radio. The reason why we like to have a low SWR, particularly when we're using coaxial cable, is it has a harder time when connected to the radio when dealing with that. And what generally happens, and I've got good news, what generally happens is if you don't have that much of a mismatch, you're still going to radiate that power. The reflected power is just going to get put back in the transmitter and go out or into your matching system, whatever it is, and continue to transmit. When you start going a bit higher in the SWR, it can lead to losses, but that's the general idea of what SWR is. It's reflected voltage coming back down the antenna. Oh, that was two fast ones. K88M and T Tom, keep giving the great info. It helped me a lot. Thank you, buddy. Hey, Ham Radio DX. Thanks, Josh, for another great topic. Antennas are fun to play with, especially if you have success. Yeah. So you know what? I did make a slide for this, but I'll say this really quick. And I think it deserves maybe a little, you know, divergence here. I have made one-day antennas that I put up like a dipole. Put up, no problem. I've had other antennas, like my hex beam that's on the roof, that has taken me a very long time to dial in and make good. And I know there's guys out there. They're on our Discord. We talk about them a lot. They're making magnetic loop antennas. And they spend a lot of time dialing them in, tooling around with them, working on them all the time. Don't get frustrated. You know, you can put up a dipole in the meantime, right? Dipoles are easy. Pick your favorite band, pick your favorite two bands, put up a dipole, and then you can play around with the other antennas, you know, your hot rod antennas, if you will. But just keep that in mind. A lot of antennas take a lot of time. So, you know, take your time with it, and it's a lot of fun. I find antennas to be some of the most interesting stuff in radio because it's kind of black magic-y. Anyway, so that's my thoughts on SWR. I didn't really say any thoughts. That's just what it is. It's the ratio of how bad your reflected power to outbound power is. We try to keep that low. Not always. We try to. And when you have a mismatch, it's likely coming right back down the antenna, going back into the transmitter, and then being retransmitted. So it's not much to worry about. The only time you get losses is if you have very lossy coax cable. Okay. So now we can expand this into other antennas. So you understand dipole, you understand verticals. Now let's talk about Yagis. Well, what is a Yagi? A Yagi is just a dipole with pieces behind it and pieces in front of it. That's really what it is. I know it's more complicated than that, but that's what it is in a nutshell. So if you have a dipole, and again, Yagis only have two elements, right? Two sides, right? That are radiating elements. The other pieces are all parasitic. I know there's more complicated Yagis that do more multi-banded whatever, but in the case of just a monoband Yagi, right, operating on an HF band or whatever, or VHF band, you know, people use Yagis for 2 meters. You're really only putting the power out on two of the elements, and that's basically a dipole. The element behind it, which is a little bit longer, is your reflector. And then everything in front of those two radiating elements are shorter and shorter and shorter, and those are called directing elements. So that's what focuses your RF. When you transmit, the longer one bounces the RF forward, and the smaller ones focus it more forward or reduce it, right? So Yagis are generally mounted on a rotator or a rotor, and you move that around to point to whatever you're trying to hear, right? And, you know, there's a lot of, that's what the attempt is. They still work for stations that are not directly in their path, but it's good to know kind of what it is, right? It's a dipole with elements behind it that are not connected, elements that are in front of it that are not connected, and that's what helps you focus the RF. So this is the breakdown of the parts in a Yagi, in case you were curious. So the radiating elements are the two pair, right, that are on the left before the last one. And it's a little bit shorter than the reflector, which is all the way in the back. And then the two in the front are your directors, right? So that's what it's doing. It's focusing the RF down. And they're all connected to what's called the boom. And then you have that connected to the mast. And in the middle there, the thing looks like a bulge with a loop of coax around it. I have horrible handwriting. Chris says I have pretty handwriting. I have horrible handwriting. Thank you, though. That's awesome. The rotator is what turns to allow you to point it like a flashlight, right? If you've thought about, hey, this is just a big flashlight, that's how it works. So there you go. And sometimes you have something called a gamma match, which if you have your ham radio license, likely your general, you have covered a question regarding a gamma match. Yagis, pros and cons. So focusing your RF makes targeting certain areas easier, right? This applies to transmit and receive. If you can point it to one area, like if you're trying to work a DX station in the Pacific, you swing that thing right over, point to the Pacific, and boom, there you go. Now, you might still pick up people behind you, right, because they're coming in on the backside of the antenna. I don't know how many times I've been on HF and somebody goes, oh, I'm picking you up on the back of my beam. Hey, you got a good signal if you're making it through the back of my beam. Well, kind of, right? So keep that in mind. Oh, you know what? I didn't mention the log periodic. That's a blunder of mine. Yeah, log periodic is another really cool antenna. That's actually a really fun antenna. I should have talked about that. Damn. Okay. So there you go. So gain, by using these parasitic elements against the radiating elements, you're focusing the RF and you're creating gain. I believe I have a slide that covers gain in a second. Do I? I don't. Did I mention it before? Okay, gain is the ratio of signal strength expressed in dB to an isotropic dipole. And again, an isotropic dipole, which is what a lot of antennas are compared with. Whenever you look at an antenna and they say, oh, it's got 3 dB gain, 6 dB gain, 12 dB gain, they're comparing it to a hypothetical space dipole, right? So be wary when someone tells you how much gain their antenna has. They're using modeling software to create a simulation of a dipole in space. It's like a space baby, but a space dipole. So you've got this dipole floating in space, you know, with a radio connected to it, perfect one-to-one SWR, and blah, blah, blah. When you're running it against this type of antenna and doing a comparison, they're factoring in the gain upper in dB in comparison to that isotropic, this isotropic space dipole. So that's pretty much how it works. Okay. Oh, so cons. They're complicated to a certain degree. on HF. They're easy. They're pretty easy on VHF, UHF, and they're expensive, particularly on HF. You need an antenna, which are expensive. You need a mast, which is expensive. You usually have to pour concrete. They like to be high up, so you need a big, long, tall mast and a rotor, which can be really expensive as you start adding weight. Those rotors are getting a lot of force put on them, and they need to turn while having all that weight pushed down directly on top of them. So Yagis can be, I would call Yagi, so if we were playing an MMO, if Ham Radio was an MMO, Yagis are like late game weapons. Like if you have like an epic weapon, a late game epic weapon, that's a Yagi. Some people try to like shortcut and they power level and they min-max to get to the Yagis earlier in their Ham Radio career, but generally I find it's, you know, somewhat of something that comes later. Thrust bearing, the carry says thrust bearings. So thrust bearings keep you from shear, but you still have the pressure going down on top of the rotor. I don't think you can avoid that. But you don't want to have given it any shear. Late game Yagis, that's what it is. Hashtag late game Yagis. Post that in the comments. Late game Yagis. All right, so hex beam. So a hex beam, this is my roof. This is my hex beam that's on my roof. This I took my drone out. This is my Mavic. I took this picture like 4 hours ago. So it's a multi-band, two-element, stacked directional antenna. So let me break that down. A hex beam is comprised of two-element directional antennas. They have a reflector and a radiating element, right? So if we think about what we saw earlier about Yagis, you've got a reflector in the back, it's the longest elements, and then you have the radiating element, that's the part that's connected to the coax. Well, that's the only thing that the hex beam has. It's got the radiating element and a big reflector that pushes that RF forward or most of it. What gives you the multiband is that umbrella effect. Down at the bottom, that's where your high band HF is, and then as it starts going up the umbrella, you're stacking wires on top of it, right? And so hex beams generally cover 6 meters to 10 meters, 12 meters, 15, 17, and 20 meters. The top of mine has a 40 meter element, but I don't know how much gain you get on that. And generally, gain on this antenna is conservatively 6 dB of gain. Okay? I have an illustration. Of course I have an illustration. I've got this iPad Pro that I want to use. So this is a little rough, but I think it paints the picture, if you will. Okay, so if you were looking directly down, on like top down, took your drone, took a picture vertically, this is what a hex beam would look like. So the outermost circle or hexagon is the longest wire elements for the lowest band. So 20 meters is the most amount of wire, then 15, then 10, then 6. Now, the part that's important, and it's these purple parts. So that is what separates the radiating elements from the reflector, right? That's what's giving you that two-element beam characteristic. So in the middle here, right, in this middle center connector, that's where the coax is, down at the bottom. And these two left and right side, this open pie shape, if you will, right, this open pie shape, these are the radiating elements that come up and out of the hex beam. That is how it works. That's how you get this two-part antenna, and the reflector is just this back end part behind it, and that's how every element works, every band's elements work on a hex beam. So the parts are, the spreading arms is kind of what gives you that umbrella effect, the wire radiating and the radiating wire, and then the reflecting elements, and then you have this insulators, I didn't have a better term, but it's basically line, a Dacron type line, and then you have like a center mass that this all kind of connects to. That's a hex beam. These are all terms. So hex beam pros and cons. Pro, very low wind noise. If you live in an area that has pretty bad weather and you can't run a Yagi because you're worried it'll get taken out, because those are generally kind of like directionally heavy because it's, you've got a boom that turns. Yagis are almost balanced on their wind load. They are multiband. That's the point of them. They're less expensive than a Yagi. They're relatively light. Lighter than a Yagi. Cons, they seem to work best on long distances. Like, I can't get picked up east of the Mississippi. I'm kidding, but like I can't really work local states with my hex beam. I can only work Texas and further east with my beam for some reason. But hey, that's not really that big of a problem for me. Lots of wire, a ridiculous amount of wire, lots of wires, lots of connections, lots of like cordage that you have to deal with, slack that you got to take up, lots of stuff to keep in mind. And it's the first time you do it, you're going to get into this thing where like one of the legs, the spreader legs will be up too high and canted to the left or right. And you kind of, it takes you a little while to get to the thing where you can just get it to balance and kind of sit and float there correctly. It takes a little work. Not like a Yagi, you just throw the pieces on it, boom, that's it. All right, loop antennas. So loops, there's generally two types of loops. There's a full wave loop, which is the one you see that looks like a big rectangle. And then there is a magnetic. Oh, so somebody said, I'm so glad I went with the cobweb. So Stitch says, I'm so glad I went with the cobweb. The only downside, let me go back to the hex beam here. So the only downside of cobweb versus hex beam, cobwebs don't give you any gain. Hex beams do. And that is the reason. So, what is it? 3 dB of gain is 1 S unit. So, the more S units you have, you know, the more dBs you have in gain, the more S units you have as far as your receive signal when you're getting picked up. Gain is good, right? If you can't buy it. So, we're talking antennas. So, let's just say a better antenna is worth more than an amp most of the time. It's often better to upgrade your antenna life before you upgrade your amp life or your power life, because you're going to receive better and you're going to transmit better, right? So think about that. So two types of loop wires or loop antennas. Full wave is literally just one full wavelength of wire. So 80 meters, right? 80 meters of wire that you gotta put onto your property. Mounted horizontally or vertically, it doesn't matter. You can adjust the feed point angle, which will give you a vertically polarized versus horizontally polarized effect. Lots of options with full wave loops. Magnetic loops, which is the guy in the lower right, smaller, 10% or less of the wavelength is the full size. And what it, oh, that's interesting. Oh, it says create, it got cut off. There's a white space. But anyway, there's a feed loop, and that's kind of what this little guy is right here. This little feed loop, not really connected to the outer loop, but what's happening is you're basically getting a transformer effect. So the voltage, the RF voltage is coming up the coax into the feed loop, and then you get a transformer coupling to the larger loop that then is how you radiate the power, right? The cool thing about loops is, particularly the magnetic loop, is it kind of works directionally, kind of, and also kind of works NVIS. And NVIS, we're going to talk about it again, I promise, I got a slide coming up, but NVIS gives you good vertical radiation that then comes back down as a wider footprint. Good for MCOMs. Downside is variable capacitors are often needed, and that's what this little box is. This little box is basically lengthening this outer hoop, which allows you to get tuning, right, as you change tuning. So the benefits of a full wave loop, actually pros and cons of a full wave loop. Pros, very effective on a full wave loop. I have heard people on full wave loops that just blow my mind when they tell me they have a full wave loop. They sound awesome. Picking them up, super, super awesome. And sometimes these are people that they can't hear me. They can't copy me with my beam. But I get them no problem just because I'm not making it. I'm not giving them the power. So it's multi-banded to a point because you have a full wavelength, for example, 80 meter wire. You have also 40 meters on that and then 20 to a certain degree. Or what is it? It's 40, 30, and 80, 40, and 40, 20, I think is how it works. So you basically, by having the one full wavelength of 80, you also get other bands as you use a tuner to basically tune down into it. And that's a harmonic of the wire that you're running, the length of that wire. So they're relatively cheap to set up, and there's very little involved. You just need a lot of space to put them up in, and it's a lot of wire, but still very simple. Very simple. There it is. Michael Brittick, he gave me the detail I needed. Thank you, buddy. 100 internets to you. Loops are resonant on even harmonics. Very, very good. That was perfect. Thank you. It was Johnny on the spot with that. Okay. Somebody asked a question about TV twin lead, but it sounds like they got it. It is open feed line and have very low loss. Open feed line, which we're not covering it here since most of these antennas are going to be coax, but you could run, this would be the one that you would run it with a feed line, ladder line. Ladder line, or called window line or TV line, is two wires that are running together that are separated by a square of plastic and then a window and a square of plastic and then a window. I have a tuner that will take a window line. It's that MFJ998. There are other tuners that will take it as well. There are less radios that will accept twin lead. You generally have to run it through some kind of tuner to run it. The advantage of the twin lead is it's very low loss, and it's called a balanced feed line. And I can explain this really simply. Coax, your center pin is wrapped by that other cable, basically. So twin lead, the two lines are together. Coax is one of the wires wrapped in a shielding that goes up. That is unbalanced. You literally have the other wire choking out the one in the center. That's the radiating one where the power is going through. That's an unbalanced feed line. Balanced feed line, they two run together in parallel. They work very well in lots of applications, although they've fallen out of favor because they are more cumbersome to use. Everybody's generally using coax. Coax is a lot easier to put a connector on, run it through a wall, bulkhead connector, all that stuff. So we generally run coax these days. All right, magnetic loop, pros and cons. Pros, very portable in most cases. Very, very portable. My 40 meter, and in fact, I should probably get the larger outer loop for mine, but really, really portable. I love taking it on vacation because that's all you need. This little stand here, and this is way too, this is not drawn to scale. I don't know who drew this, but was not drawn to scale. It's a very small footprint, and I'll have a picture of it in a little bit, you know, when I was out on the beach. Really easy to pack along with you. It's larger than a QRP antenna, some of the ones we're going to talk about in a second, but they're very good receiving antennas. Very, very good receiving antennas. The con for all this cool magic that's going on with the coupler matching of the transformer to the outer loop is that you have a very high Q. And high Q means that you're kind of squashing the bandwidth of effectivity to a very finite space, only a couple hundred kilohertz on each side, basically. So what that means is, if you're trying to scan around the band, if you're trying to just sit there like I do when I'm driving to work and I'm just scrolling around, not a good antenna for that. Because what has to happen is you've got to go outside or wherever and tune this box to match the frequency that you're trying to receive. And how you generally tune it and how you use it is you'll have your cans on or you'll have your speaker turned up and you'll listen for the noise floor to fluctuate. And it goes really quickly. And then you get it to the point of the highest noise, and then you initiate some kind of tone, some kind of mode with a carrier frequency. AM, FM works really well. CW with a straight key, just hold that down, get you your SWR reading. Remember, don't use a tuner with mag loops. You don't want to do that. You want to tune it with the variable capacitor that is on the antenna. Cody Callahan says, is the loop better for NVIS propagation? It is better than most antennas. It's not better than the antenna we're going to talk about at the end about NVIS, but generally it is better. The last two bullets are predominantly some of the things that kind of make it not the most popular antenna. They're generally low powered only because if you feed it with a lot of power, you will arc over the variable capacitor that is in this box right here, right? And if you arc it over, most of the time it's a done deal. Sometimes you get lucky, and it can get very expensive for good capacitors. So that's a lot of the reason why people don't necessarily use mag loops. But whenever I've used them, I've really liked them, and they're great receivers, like I said. All right, so I'm just putting this in there as just a continuation of the Yagi. So if you had a loop and you put a parasitic loop behind a radiating loop, you'd have a quad. And that's what a quad is. It's basically a resonant loop on a frequency. A lot of the times these get used on VHF, UHF, and you put something, a reflector behind it, a wider loop behind it. And of course, there's maths that go into this. So don't just go like, it's bigger, it'll work. And that gives you a beam effect, right? You get gain out of doing that. So that's what a quad is. There's another term. The end-fed half-wave, or as we like to call it, the EFHW. So here's a really interesting way to think about an end-fed half-wave. End-fed, right? You've got a box with a long wire, and we're going to talk about that long wire in a second. It's basically a dipole, right? The voltage pattern of an end-fed is the same as a dipole. Dipoles are fed in the middle, and then you've got your... An end-fed is just one, and it's fed this way. But the voltage pattern is still an arc that happens in the middle, and you still have your current that goes in the same pattern. So there's a lot... This is another one. Like, SWR is a huge flame topic. So is the end-fed half-wave. Super flame bait antenna. There's so many beliefs out there that are based on personal opinion or personal experience, not necessarily scientific repeatable evidence. So we'll just cover it in what I understand about it. And I've used them. They work great. I took it when I went to, I staked my YouTube credibility, my ham radio YouTube credibility on an end-fed antenna when I went to go hang out with the Modern Road guys, and it worked great. So NFEDs are great. I like NFEDs, but we'll talk about the cons in a second. So in most situations, NFEDs are a decent performer. At its best, it'll perform similar to a dipole, right? That's kind of its thing. It's a dipole. It's a dipole that you're feeding from the end where you've got the most voltage, which you've got to deal with. How do you deal with it? That's where this other stuff comes in. So what are the parts of an NFED? You have a half-wave radiating wire. The half-wave in half-wave end-fed is that you're putting up a wire that is a half wavelength for the band you're trying to operate on. So if it's, 40 meters is like, do I have that spool of wire around here somewhere? I bought a spool of wire because I'm building a half-wave end-fed. Well, shoot. Anyway, hey, Ham Radio TV. Long-time watcher, first-time super chatting. Thank you. I appreciate that. My wife's... Everybody be quiet. Be quiet. My wife's in the chat. But which antenna makes your wife the most angry? Oh, we know which antenna makes your wife the most angry. We know which one that is. That is definitely the hex beam. We already covered the hex beam. So what you have is you have the radiating element, right? And that's half wave of whatever frequency you're trying to operate on. So a 40-meter band, that's going to be half wavelength on that band. You literally need that wire. And you get the same kind of harmonic effect. That's what gives you the multi-band nature with the half-wave end-fed, is that it's will work for 40 meters and bands higher than that due to the harmonics of that length of wire. Generally... The box that you get, because all NFEDs are going to have a box of some kind, this magic box, has got a 49-to-1 un-un in it. And that's an unbalanced unbalanced. That's what un-un means. That transformer, and that's what it's doing, and actually I didn't draw it perfectly here. When you get close to the coax, there's actually a twist of wires. Lee Harrell, thankfully, we don't have to go to Walmart to buy our amateur radio supplies. Tried to send you 556, but YouTube won't let me. Yeah, man. Ooh, that is a... I'm not going to cover that in this video or this channel, but yeah, that's a problem. Hey, everybody. X-Beam is right. My wife can confirm. Well, Sterling is in the house, and he's saying, I'd say Josh nailing two lawn chairs to the wall of your house must make you the most angry. No, she wanted those chairs. Turns out she was going to do a beach day, and she wanted some retro chairs, and she's like, where did these chairs come from? These are amazing. I was like, oh, I just took them off the roof. You can take them if you want. That was a great story. Anyway, so the transforming effect of this 49-to-1 un-un is basically allowing you to match the coax. It's getting you back down to 50 ohms for matching to the coax. I didn't draw it correctly. If you go look at one online, you'll get a better picture of it. Once I make mine, then I'll post an image of it as well. Now, the thing that sometimes is or isn't there, and that's why it's got a question mark, is sometimes there's a radial. I know that my Chameleon MCOM base station NFED has a radial. It's not shipped with one. I attached it, and it seems to work pretty well. It brought the noise level down. Does it make it more effective? Maybe, but I don't really know. It's in a really bad place. The worst place for it ever, but that's my 80-meter antenna. People, and this is where it turns into this flame bait that I'm not going to get into. People fight over whether a NFED should have a radial or not. The reality is the physics of antennas, right? Again, it's a dipole or whatever. If you don't put a radial on it, then you're going to be using the coax as your counterpoise, or to a degree, it's going to be an active involved member in that antenna. People believe if you attach a radial, it will reduce that effect, or it will use the radial as the radial. Otherwise, the coax gets involved. So, what are the pros? Easy to build, so much as you're okay with winding toroids. And it's a transformer, which means you're going to have a couple of turns where you're going to have more than one wire. There's going to be three wires in some cases. They're easy to build. They're easy to get on the air. We're going to talk about... do I have that? No. Oh, I thought I did have another slide. Oh, I'm so sorry. I spent so much time drawing. But anyway, I'll cover this quickly. They're easy to get on the air because you can throw that NFED anywhere you want. You can throw it in a tree, right? Just throw it in a tree. Boom, easy. You can have a mast where your box is on the ground, the wire goes up and then comes across. That's an inverted L. Works great. You can have a mast where your box is attached to coax. The box goes all the way to the top of the mast and then comes sloping down to like a tree. That's called a sloper. Slopers are very effective, recommended by Chameleon on how to use the NFEDs. They really like sloper configurations, particularly if you can get them high up in the air. So easy to build, easy to put on the air. There was Soda Beams. Soda Beams is a UK company that did a poll on favorite QRP soda antennas, and the NFED Halfwave was number one. So the con, they often will be less efficient than a dipole, and you might get RF back into the shack. So the NFED Halfwave is generally a popular QRP antenna because the more power you put in, the more problems you're going to get that way. Who is at our house? Somebody's at our house. I've got so much noise going on in the background. I apologize. So let's talk J-poles. So the antenna that looks like a J, easy to build out of common copper tubing or copper plumbing, and that's actually what I built mine out of, if you saw that video. The J-pole is a vertical that uses a tuning stub to match the antenna. So here's a closer illustration. So how this works is basically from this little purple line all the way up, this is basically your radiating quarter wave element. I know there's copper underneath it, but anything that's below this tuning stub is kind of dead space. Everything above that, that's the radiating space of the antenna. And how you tune it, right, for your SWR is this little wire that goes between the leftmost, the smaller tuning stub and the vertical piece, call it. That's, you raise that and lower that, and that's how you find your SWR. So the parts of it are you have a radiating element, you have a tuning stub, some kind of feed line bridge. Okay, close my door. Close my door, tell mommy. My wife's in the chat too. Get our kid. There's a mast and there's coax. He's very proud of himself, though, so that's good. Pros and cons. Extremely cheap to build. Easy to mount on a home. The only thing you need to keep in mind is you don't want to use a metallic mast for a J-pole. They're easy to tune. I tuned with an HT with an SWR meter in the middle, and I would just adjust it until I found the match on the frequency I wanted to use it on. And until you have that, you just slide that up and down until you find it. And it can be built out of rigid plumbing or flexible twin lead, as we just talked about. Twin lead, two pieces of wire that walk together, right, and is separated by plastic. You can build a J-pole out of twin lead. They're very easy to build. I know there's a lot of people that make flexible J-poles out of twin lead, but it is something that you can make extremely easy. So before you spend the money on a retail J-pole, a flexible J-pole, think about buying one. Extremely easy. The con, though, is they're largely affected by metallic objects. So try to keep it away from metal. Try to keep it from other things like that. Okay. One radial verticals. So these radios show up now, or these antennas show up now and then in the QRP world. Like this picture, we've got the MFJ, I think it's the 1855T. The Elecraft AX1, which is relatively new, is kind of like a vertical dipole or a one radial vertical. That's saying the same thing, basically. It's an antenna, single spike, with a radial that they recommend kind of elevating it a little bit above the earth, right? We already talked about what that is. These antennas are essentially dipoles with a rigid vertical section and a wire radial. These perform best when the radial is slightly elevated. Excuse me. And never raise the radial above the vertical portion, because if you do that, you start to shorten the antenna. Okay, let's cover NVIS and then we'll talk about some builds. Man, we went way over. I didn't realize we're gonna go over, guys. Hang on tight. So near vertical incidence skywave, NVIS. Very fancy title. It basically means how to create a situation where an antenna is focusing the radiation as vertically as possible so that it hits the atmosphere and then bounces back down. So if it goes up in a small little beam, right, small little beam of RF, maybe it's going to come back down in a floodlight of RF is kind of the point. The advantage of doing something like that is MCOM or local comms. If you want to have a really strong signal to local comms, NVIS is the way to go. So NVIS is definitely the way to go if you're local comms or MCOM type of guy. To make a NVIS antenna very easily, open up that toolbox, that emergency toolkit of comms equipment that you have stowed away after I said you should do this. Take that ballon, make yourself up a dipole, and then make sure that that dipole horizontally, must be horizontal, is lower than 1/4 wavelength. So if you're on the 20 meters, right, you're going to be under 14 feet about. Call it less than that, right? So just aim for lower than that. So pretty low. Okay. So here's another term. This is kind of outside the antenna stuff, but I thought we'd cover it. Because we talked a lot about monoband antennas, and a lot of the ways that we get to multiband antennas is we use something called coils and traps. So all... It's either all traps or coils or all coils or traps. I got to think about that for a second. But anyway, let me talk coils. Coils is the easiest thing to talk about. So a coil, if you had a vertical, right? And I have a vertical that used this this same idea. In fact, we can go back. Let me go back right here. So this topmost image, right? This antenna coil here. The vertical spike, which is right next to it, right? That is a fixed 10 feet or so. A vertical. That's not going to get you on 20 meters. But if you attach this coil to it and then you adjust this collar so that you have roughly a couple of these loops inductively connected to this vertical, you've created a 14 meter vertical, right? So you've taken something that was vertically lengthened and you've electronically linked it or lengthened it by adding coils, loops of coils to it. That's what we use with coils. We use coils to basically lengthen our antenna without necessarily increasing the vertical height. In the example here, my Nissan Leaf has a coil antenna in the form of what's called a screwdriver, which allows me to slide that outer sheath up and down, and that gives me a longer antenna that I can use from anywhere from 40 And that antenna goes all the way down to 70 centimeters, believe it or not. So, loading coil. You got the idea. Now, a trap, on the other hand, the upper right-hand corner is a G5 RV Lite, and that has a trap. And how a trap works is basically everything close to the connection point, or where that ballon is going to be where your lower banded antenna would be. And as you get closer to the trap, this would all be a radiating antenna on that band that it was cut for. The trap gives you a lot of impedance, which basically cuts it, and that other portion of the wire is not really used. However, when you bump up the frequency to 40 meters, 80 meters, then you will not only use all of the coils, but then the rest of this wire. So it's a way to kind of like dummy load out a portion of the antenna. However, it adds loss. My G5 RV had a lot of loss when you tried to operate on 80 meters. Although I was able to work Arizona, where my buddy lives. So I put this in there for fun. The Abri. What's the deal with the Abri antenna? So 18 inches, 24 inches, 42 inches, 2 meters, and 70 centimeter whip antennas for HTs. Recent experimentation shows it's a good performer on 2 meters, better than my Nagoya 771. And what is it? Well, the reality is that this lower portion that are on all these Abris that's under this little thing that you can untwist, this is likely a coil of some kind of matching system. And then you have this really long vertical, and that's the magic of it. It's not anything that magical. It's just a really long antenna with a coil of wire. Again, so if this is the center post of your coax, then this would be the shielding of your coax down here. That's what gives you a little bit, helps with the match. Is my wife still trolling me in the chat? She is. Oh, and she's got admin, so careful. All right, let's go. Why am I getting, wait a second. What's wrong with my green screen here? There. Recommended builds. Okay, so right out of the gate, build yourself a dipole. We already covered this. Build yourself a mono band or fan dipole. You want to have 20 meters, 40 meters. Those are the sweet frequencies to be on right now. You could build this tomorrow. You can run down to Home Depot. You could buy all this equipment. You could have this up in the air. By the end of the day, if not Sunday, you can be operating radio. You can do this right now. I challenge you. Go build yourself a mono band dipole. And if you want to go for extra credit on the Ham Radio Crash Course, build yourself a fan dipole. Fan dipoles are magical, right? So if this upper portion here is 40 meters, let's just say, and this lower portion is 20, when you set your radio to 40 meters, it will only use that upper portion. When you set it to 20 meters, it will only use the lower portion. The radio knows. It's magic. No, it's not. It's just the length of the antenna. That's where the match is, and so that's where it goes. So, I do agree. First antenna you should build is probably a dipole. I'll give you extra credit.
I showed all of them already.
Well, I'm doing a live stream, buddy. Can you close it? Mm. I'll talk to you later. Close it, please. Please close it. Please.
Let me show you.
Please close it. Jeez. So, I started with a 20-meter dipole myself on HF that I built. It worked great. Cut the wires to length. Attach a coax somehow. I would recommend definitely have a one-to-one ballon. I would not build another dipole without a one-to-one ballon, although I have built, well, I take that back. I would buy a KG6 HQD. Not buy. I would build a KG6 HQD. So, well, anyway, I would say still have a one-to-one ballon. And mount it as high as you can and keep the legs horizontal. B and C post vertical. This is literally, I'm scraping the barrel for like the cheapest thing you can do. A B and C post vertical is just a quarter wave radial and a quarter wave vertical that you attach to a B and C. These are great for QRP radios. A lot of the QRP guys use them. The Soda Goat, or is it W6OAT, I believe. W6OAT, the Soda Goat. He uses these a lot on his KX2 and his Mountain Topper. Anyway, simple. You just go buy that sucker, cut the wire to length, and get that thing up as high as you can. Hopefully you have a tuner. A 10-to-1 tuner is going to work the best, but there it is. You've got an antenna, super easy to build. Also a good MCOM antenna, throw that in a bag, and then you've got it, and you'll be able to use it when you need it. J-pole. I built that so that YouTube video that's been up for a really long time, I built that in, I sourced the parts and built that in one afternoon. My kid was in it. If you want to see young Ben, he's in it. Works great. I still have it. It's on the side of the house. It's fine. I'll probably use it in the future, but I have a little bit better antenna now. Still works fine, though, and it's a fun project, particularly if you want to get ridiculed online about how bad your copper sweating soldering skills are. And I think this is the last one. Tape measure Yagis. I think that if you built a dipole as your first antenna, then you should probably build a tape measure Yagi as your second antenna. These are super easy to build. They're super cheap, and they're fun. It gives you a real appreciation of, like, pointed at a repeater, you're hearing the repeater. Pointed away, you're not hearing anything. It gives you a real appreciation how you can get control over RF and your radiation. For, I don't know, get a free Harbor Freight tape measure, get a couple of PVC pipe pieces that I know you have in your garage. I know you've got the joint. I mean, who uses T-joints? I know you've got some T-joints that you accidentally bought. Nobody ever uses those. Turn that into an antenna. There you go. You can use that to receive the ISS the next time it comes around. This is a monoband antenna. If you wanted to do dual band, you would need to do the 70-centimeter elements vertically or perpendicularly opposed to the 2-meter. And that's it. You just rotate it, and that's how you'd get the effect out of it. Okay. And lastly, build yourself, particularly if you're going to be a portable QRP guy, portable whatever guy or gal, or do soda, NFED Halfwave would be a great antenna to add to your stable of antennas. Super easy to build. The hardest part is winding that toroid because you've got that transformer match, so you do have a couple of wires that you have to roll at the same time. There are literally, all you need is an image on the internet to figure out how to make these. You don't really need even videos to make it. They're that easy to build. And there are kits available online that you can use. I have a QRP guys kit over here that I'm going to build shortly. Works great. Go with that. Or buy one that I'm using right here, which is from Chameleon, the one I took to the Modern Rogue. Chameleon MCOM 3, wonderful radio. Comes with the Radial 2. I keep saying radio. A wonderful antenna. It has the radiating element and the radial all attached and on that winder. Works perfectly. RCB757 says, good information and presentation. Thank you very much. Well, thank you, buddy. I think that's it. Is that it? It is it. Okay, so we're 10 minutes over, but I will turn on the call just in case we have somebody call in. And I'll monitor chat right now in case anybody has any questions. I know there's been a lot of questions, and I'm sorry I haven't been able to answer them all. But if I don't get to them, it's okay. Come join us on the Discord. And I'll switch over here. And I'll have a sip of my beer. Oh, man, I don't want to talk about tuners. I mean, I do, but tuners are complicated. Oh, my chat. What happened? There it is, back. Oh, number one entertainment. Every time I need to look ham radio tutorials, I go to this channel. Thank you. Oh, that's very thank you so much. That means a lot to me. You're joking me out, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. What is this going over I hear tell of? I don't know. BLR says, Josh, are you thinking about doing more POTA soon? Oh, the Collins thing's gone. I've not done any POTAs, although now that I have the Yaesu in my car, I can totally do some POTA activations. And we've got about 5 or so parks around me that I did forget the rhombus that we can activate from, so maybe. Yeah, say no to Kilo. He says he's going to do POTA tomorrow, so make sure you try and hit up Ohio. You can do a park to park activation. JP Tucson, Arizona, what about ferrite chokes versus balance to reduce noise and prevent RF on shield? Great question. Not necessarily part of this stream, but I will be posting a video on that topic. I will be. Promise. I've already got most of it shot. I gotta tell you, I have so many parts of video shot right now, it's the first time it's ever happened in my life. Okay. Well, it's okay. If any... Oh, no, we got... Well, hold on. We got two callers. Here we go. Here we go, caller. Hey, caller, what's your name? Caller? Are you there, caller?
Hey. Yes, I am. Do you hear me?
Yes, what's your name?
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Don. I'm going to be taking my technician test next week. How do you explain an octopus antenna?
So, do you know how a fan dipole works?
Kind of.
So, an octopus antenna is just a fan dipole, but more of them. And they're cross-hatched. They're just all dipoles, right?
Okay. Okay.
Your radio...
I didn't know if there was...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so what happens is, so if you had three dipoles on the center connector of the octopus, one on 20, one on 10, right, and one on 40, the 10 and the 40 are going to give you massive amounts of impedance when you're trying to operate 20. So your RF is just going to go to the 20 where it's effective for it to radiate, and that's why it uses that pair instead of the other pairs.
Okay. All right. I understand.
Right on. Any other questions?
I appreciate it. No, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Take it easy. See ya. All right. Well, there we go. We got a call in. I know a lot of you people are watching on the phone, so you don't generally call in because then you'd have to, like, swap out. Well, what time is it? All right. I'm going to... Quick thoughts on harp? No, I'm not going to do quick thoughts on... Quick thoughts on harp. Okay. Do people have quick thoughts on harp? All right, so I've got one more thing, and then we'll jump into the Patreon. Let me go to this guy. We have created a HRCC Hall of Fame. The top 10 patrons... Ron Thorson, Bill McCarty, Wyoming Ham, Michael Kearney, William Horton, Paul Vest, Chris Ebert, Jason Siebert, Jason Brown, and Kerry Blackwell. That is a link that I have on my blog, which is off of the Hoshnossi.com website. And for all of our active patrons, including the Hall of Fame, there's a reason why they have that title. Big thanks to Chris Ebert, Kerry Blackwell, Jason Brown, Jason Siebert, David Dancero, Danny, and don't anybody leave yet. We're going to the Discord, so make sure you get over there. Danny Miller, Wesley Magyar, Barbara Schrock, Will Ladd, Franklin Lewis, Brad Snyder, Dennis Dunderdale, Garrett Larson, Jonathan Franson, AD6DM Dennis, The Wyoming Ham, Randall Hinsley, Dennis Mickelson, George Gaini, Andy, Kenny Miyamoto, Ron Thorson, Ken Hall, Corey Vuelta, there you go, Mr. Mode, David Mayers, Devin B. Hedge, Mark Chase, Raymond Cracker, Helrado Kelso, Rob K8BCR, Lee Harrell, Michael Kearney, Steve Barker, Mark Fields, who's new, thank you, Mark, Corey Sheldon, Brad Nadal, Stephen Hunt, Brian Nosowitz, Connor Carroll, Mike Marusin, Mike Hill, I did this the last time, anyway, Mike, reach out and let me know how to pronounce your name. Gerald Carpenter. Thank you. And, of course, the Brew Crew. We still have the call-ins. I'm going to leave that up for a second. Everybody make sure you go to the Discord where we still got 373 people watching. Why not hop over to the Discord right now? Could you imagine how crazy that's going to be? That's going to be insane. Let's try it. Let's see if we can break some kind of record today. And I will be streaming to Twitch on the after stream. So if you want to get the link to Twitch, it's on the Discord side where I will be streaming from. So what is the hop notes you get on that beer? Oh, hey, so yeah, let me go. We'll wrap this up a little beer talk. So this is like really mild for a triple IPA. It's not. I don't pick out any. I don't even know who makes this thing. Oh, it's Left Coast. They know better than that. It's fairly. It's just strong without having a really nice kind of hop note either way. Like, I don't taste any kind of hop note that would remind me of a specific type of hops or anything like that. So it's just kind of there. VA2WLT Walter says, many online calculators for each model of antenna. Yeah, totally true. And that's a really great point. You can build most of these things super easy just by checking out online calculators. Hey, caller, what's your name?
Hey, Mike Friedman, W4MAF.
How you doing, Mike?
Hey, man, doing fine. Good show tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate you watching. What's going on?
Yeah, so I've got plans for installing a mega long loop antenna, 600 foot.
Is mega long?
We'll get it up in the air.
You're talking about a full wavelength.
Yeah, full wavelength.
All right.
It's gonna go. It's a wooded area that surrounds about an acre of property.
Right.
So that's all good and fine. I've got the wire selected, but I tell you, the one thing I don't find as much information about, and I know you can do a lot of research on it, is the proper way to harness that up in the tree.
I will tell you.
A pulley system, ropes. Go ahead.
I'll tell you how to do it. Okay, so this is actually really important. I didn't go into all the details on this, but I kind of should have. So the one thing that you don't want to do is give a static connection to a wire. Type antenna. By the way, did you go a stranded wire or solid core?
Solid.
You went solid. Okay, interesting. A lot of people would recommend going stranded because it will stretch less. Solid core has a tendency to stretch over time, which you don't want to do with a full wave. You might want to look into that.
Yeah. This is the beginning of the research, but...
Oh, good. You didn't buy anything? You haven't bought anything yet?
No, I have not purchased. I did select the wire. I had seen it at a field day.
Okay.
I don't know any better, but I tell you, the other half of it is, I'm hoping for this antenna to stay up for a long time. It's going way up into the air.
Right.
And I want it to stay there, and you know... with the wind and all the trees and all of these paracord or whatever I should use. I mean, it gets down to how should I harness this and make it so that I can, you know, give it some room to move around so it doesn't break.
I cut you off. Go ahead. Finish up.
Yeah, I was going to say the last thing I want to do is have a big mess because 600 feet of wire to break is a huge mess, and I want it to stay up there.
Yeah. So first, look into stranded wire. I think it will last you longer, and it's not going to stretch. But at the same time, here is how you get it up in the air and keep it up in the air and not have that static shock effect that will snap the wires or damage the antenna. What you're going to do is you're going to throw a line into the tree, and you're going to pull up a pulley, right? A single pulley. On one end of the pulley is going to be an insulator, something that will have a low friction type setup that the wire for the antenna can pass through. On the other side is going to be the line that goes through the pulley to what's called a window weight. Remember the window weights for the old windows you used to open and close? Are you familiar with that concept? So the window weights will give you enough pull to keep the antenna taut, but when the wind picks up, the wind will pull the antenna and it will raise and lower the window weight without creating this static resistance that makes the antenna snap. So you're going to do that with every spot that you would mount the antenna up on the air, out of the air, and you're going to need to put one, if not more, window weights up. If you only have a couple of mount locations, you're going to need more window weights, if that makes sense.
It does. Cool.
Yeah. So that's a fun project, because how much space do you have to put it up on?
A little over an acre.
Oh, that's nice. If it were me and if I had that space, I would put up a full wave.
Yeah.
Loop. That's That's exactly what I would do. So I can't. So please call back when you get done with it. Call back and tell us how it all worked out and what you went with and what your experience has been so far.
I absolutely will. The date for that is October 6th. So the next show following that, I'll call in.
Right on. Okay, excellent. Great, Mike. I'm glad you called in. Thank you.
Thank you, man. All right, 73.
Take it easy, 73. All right. How would you feed that 180-meter full wave? With a ladder line or coax? You could do it either way. All right, so we're going to call it at that. It's almost 8:30. Ran this one a little bit long. Everybody, thank you so much. Consider joining the contest. I get your email, but I'm a really cautious guy. I'm really protective. I've got a high level of OPSEC, and I'm not going to use it for anything nefarious. I will email you, though, occasionally. I won't be doing it crazy weekly or anything like that because I don't have anything I'm selling you, to be honest, other than more of my content. And so I'll try and point you at some of it because it's going to be maybe a little outside YouTube coming up here. We're looking at some other stuff, which could be fun. Anyway, I'm heading to Discord. I hope you come along with me. I am Josh, KI6NAZ, and I'll talk to you later. See ya. Join the contest. Win a Shagu. My wife is screaming at the TV right now. Is she even watching? I don't know. Shagu G90. Okay. See ya.